Good afternoon. It's 7 minutes past 12 midday. The Man in Light is open through till 1 today for you to have your say about the things in play on the Isle of Man. Total tests, by the way, for COVID have been 19,678. Concluded tests, 19,648, which means 30 people are awaiting results. And 32 people are waiting for COVID-19 tests on the Isle of Man. We still have 4 non-community isolated individual cases of coronavirus on the Isle of Man. I was hoping to chat to David Ashford, MHK, the Health and Social Care Minister today, and the Director of Public Health, Henrietta Hewitt. Unfortunately, I had an email 20 minutes ago to say they weren't coming, unfortunately. Apparently, David Ashford has lost his voice, and Dr. Henrietta Hewitt has an urgent appointment at the last moment, so unfortunately, they can't be with you today. I'm terribly sorry for all the people who had emailed in questions for the Health and Social Care Minister, but maybe we'll try and get him in before Christmas, which would be nice to speak. But we do wish Mr. Ashford a very speedy recovery. His voice was going yesterday, and earlier on today, the voice disappeared. So we wish Mr. Ashford well, and hope everything is fine with him as well. And we wish Dr. Hewitt all the best in her urgent vaccination meeting as well. We were lots of people, by the way, so I'll keep all the questions. Lots of questions came in about long COVID care and also how that dovetails in with ME care on the Isle of Man. Lots of people were asking about hospital capacity and non-elective surgery being cancelled, and the fact that surgeons didn't know about it until it was announced as well. Interesting situation, a question about the locum situation on the Isle of Man. How many locum GPs are there, and is there a shortage of GPs on the Isle of Man? And the unemployment figures came out on Monday, where I was hoping to ask Mr. Ashford about the biggest gap, apparently, in the unemployment figures was healthcare. So are we short of healthcare professionals on the Isle of Man? The question that came up about the Blue Light Hub, and was there any possibility of the ambulance station moving from, actually, just by Dr. Hewitt's office at Nobles Hospital, to the Peel Road. It seems that obviously Mr. Cregeen, the Home Affairs Minister, doesn't want that Blue Light Hub moving everything together. Would it perhaps be possible to move the ambulance? Anyway, there were lots more questions, so I'll store those up in a file, and if they're relevant when Mr. Ashford restores to health, we'll find out about those. But by all means, keep questions coming in. I do keep a big file of open questions for politicians when they come in. Now, the final member of COMIN will be Alfred Cannon. On Monday, the Treasury Minister will be in to chat about what's happening in the world of Treasury as well. Roy's with us. Good afternoon, Roy.
Yes, good afternoon, Andy. And for those who are listening out there with the disappointment of not listening to the Health Minister, I don't think I'm going to get away with not being recognised by the voice, but certainly I'd like to just mention when the idea of dismantling or taking away the scoreboards was first put together, I think there was a lot of concern that it would be a case of the contractor appointed coming in with a digger or something like that and smashing everything about, and it would only be splintered wood that would be left. We run a small Facebook page, Barry Wood and myself, and I've taken it on myself to be up there most days taking photographs, not only to keep everybody in England alive as to what's going on, because they were very disappointed when they heard the news as well. But I have to say the Island Drainage and Groundworks, who were appointed to do the demolition, have been absolutely superb, and no praise can be high enough for them for the way they've systematically gone through the demolition of in by hand off the scoreboards. Everything has been carefully removed. Everything will be stored for future use if required. But I think it's just a bit of a praise, really, for the fact the way that they've gone about it. When you hear demolition, it's a bit of a brutal word. And to see the way there's been 4 lads up there in all kinds of weather, just imagine how they've been working in the conditions that have been of late. And as I say, I've been a soft lad going up there and taking photographs as well in the same conditions. But just a little kind of thank you, really, to everybody connected with it. I know they've been under the direction of the government, and they've been under the direction of, obviously, Foreman on site. But we managed to get a photograph the other day. I was that kind of impressed with the way it had gone about that we just nipped up and nipped into the cemetery there, so we're not intruding onto the site, so don't get panicking about high-vis jackets and hard hats. We took the photograph from the other side. And I think it's a nice gesture, really, in this day and age when you get things which don't go quite to plan, that when you're apprehensive about it all, that when you see it unfold and the way they've done it, it is an absolute credit to them.
Roy, just tell us how iconic in the world of motorsport and in the world of motorcycle racing, how iconic is the old TTE scoreboard?
Well, it's manually operated, and bear in mind that when it was first, I mean, I've got a history of it because I was born in Park Avenue, which is just down the road from the TT grandstand. And when I can recall from when I was about 6 or 7 and having Jeff Cannell as a cousin and Uncle Jack Cannell as my uncle, obviously they wanted to know, you know, when the scoreboards were going up, because it was a kind of a ritual in probably early May. The scoreboards would be taken out of storage up in Greenfield Road, where they'd been dismantled at the end of the Manx Grand Prix in September, and they would be like systematically re-erected onto that particular area on Glencrutchery Road. And I know for a fact that people who do like tours round the course or anything like that, there's a good 10 minutes, quarter of an hour, just talking about how iconic it is that it's operated manually. And when you think about it, I don't know how many would be involved on a normal race day, but when you think from the timekeeper's box to putting that little slate on the bottom with the actual number, with the painters involved, the Boy Scouts, I've had personal experience about looking at the light on a Crunkna Mona when my eldest lad was racing. And all that is all part and parcel of a unique system. Now, fair comment, in this day and age, it doesn't last. I mean, obviously, the main reason that the scoreboards have been taken apart is that they've been a bit like Trigger's brush. They've had new handles and new bits and pieces put on them, and it was virtually holding them all together. And you could see that when it was getting dismantled.
So, Roy, what's the new one going to look like?
Well, we haven't any indication as yet. It's going to be modern technology, obviously. Certainly, you bear in mind that modern technology has got to give pit crews an indication, as well as spectators on the grandstand and interested individuals watching for the light and watching for the clock to go round from Ballacrane to Ramsey and then to the bungalow and then to Crunkna Mona and then to the finish. You've got to have a system, I would suggest, where people within the pits who are looking after the particular rider have got to have some indication, A, whether he's retired, which was a big R that was put on the board, whether he would be due in for fuel, so that would be when it was light, it was on a Crunkna Mona, or just generally tracking him round the course. And I'm led to believe that mobile phones are not allowed in the pit for obvious reasons, because they're not compatible with about 20 litres of fuel which are hanging above their head. But I do believe that there is probably a system now that's being developed, as is in all kinds of forms of life, really, isn't it? Whereby I would suggest that the mechanics or the pit crew would have an indication individually without having to go across the road to get the information from the board. Because when you think about it, everything was on there. They had growing time, they had lap times from the previous lap painted onto slates, slotted through. The Boy Scouts would be up and down putting them on, the individual riders. Yes, there was a few that didn't quite get their light on, a Crunkna Mona, and a bike would arrive at a great rate of knots, and the crew weren't quite ready for them. But it worked, and it's worked from 1914, really, from Selborne Drive in 1914, 1911, in fact. But at the same time, that it was just an iconic, unique, the only one in the world So, I mean, there's a first. We like to brag on the Isle of Man about how we have a one-off. That will not be the case now.
But Roy, just deserved. Tell me something. How did you feel when you heard TT 2021 was cancelled?
Mixed feelings, really. Obviously, with having an interest for all those years and having been involved for a number of years as well, it's a bit of a blow. You don't look at it any other way than through my mind. I could fully appreciate why it was done. And it was like the foot and mouth in 2001, was it, when it was cancelled. Very similar, really, isn't it? I mean, it's just transferred the disease, which doesn't have to come to the, or must not come to the island, was not allowed to. And certainly 2001 caused a few raised eyebrows about this, that and the other, and people who relied on the TT, who rely on the TT for livelihood, you know, at that particular time. It was a common sense decision, really, that you couldn't have people coming to an island. And just imagine if you go down to, say, Villa Marina with Bushies or any of the other big places in the Isle of Man in TT Week, and you're mingling with about 3,500 to 4,000 other people. It only takes one person to have this terrible disease which has wrecked many lives, and you couldn't forgive yourself. And it's the correct decision. Apprehensive. I hope it doesn't, maybe it's because of my age, but I hope it doesn't develop into a thing where people say, oh, well, you know, it was nice to drive around without having to go on closed roads, and it wasn't as busy, and I got home in my usual 10 minutes instead of the half hour in TT Week. All those things will be discussed and discussed for quite a while, really, because there's nothing in 2021. We've got to wait till 22. Again, it will be dependent on what the situation is in England, with people all having to travel through England to get to the island.
Okay.
Or Great Britain.
I just had a message in, by the way, Roy. It's from a listener on the planet Mars who said, who is this? It's Roy Moore. Everybody knows. I just thought, we'll just say it for the people who didn't quite realise, the iconic voice of Ramsay Hairpin, Roy Moore. And a lady called Shelley just sent a message in to say, can you ask Roy Moore to say Stella Maris, please?
Stella Maris, round Stella Maris comes John McGuinness now, down through the box into Ramsay Hairpin. He's round, he's away, he's leading by 10 seconds, and he's done a 130-mile-an-hour lap back to the grandstand.
And the hairs raised on the back of everyone said, Roy, what a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks for being with us.
Cheers.
Roy Moore, of course, doyen of the TT set and the voice of Ramsay Hairpin. And, well, we wish well. Apparently there's been some comment from some Douglas councillors that the old scoreboard was a monstrosity and they're happy it's being replaced. It will be nice to see what the new design of the scoreboard is, and let's hope it's as iconic. Of course, it can't replace all that. The manual nature of the old scoreboard, and that was part of its charm. Let's just hope that the new scoreboard is as iconic in its own way. Man in line on today, open line through to one. If you've got anything to talk about, by all means do. Infrastructure have just tweeted, by the way, the promenades between Marina Road and Port Jacket Onken are currently being closed to through traffic due to coastal overtopping, which is sending waves and debris onto the road. Now, as soon as conditions allow the road to be reopened, we'll hear from Highway Services. And the Matrix signs on the mountain, swirling fog and high wind. Mind you, McGuinness would probably cope with it, wouldn't he? Swirling winds, swirling fog and high winds on the mountain as well. So do take care as well. That coastal overtopping is happening. Now, just to say to all the people from the Isle of Man who emailed Jeremy Vine, apparently, on the BBC yesterday. Well done. He didn't read mine out. Jeremy Vine was shocked at the amount of emails he got. This was the story of the jet ski man, the milk tray man, yesterday. Telling listeners what a beautiful place we live in and safe due to the people of the Isle of Man sticking together and abiding by the rules and looking after each other. So this idiot comes across putting us all at risk. To all the people who feel sorry for the idiot who's now in prison, go and sing Hope He's Banned from the Isle of Man after release as well. So all done to the, well done to the people of the Isle of Man, says Andy. we can hold our heads held high. Have you ever noticed when you listen to people in the UK talking about the Isle of Man, they never ever mention, as a caveat, that the Isle of Man is not part of the UK, nor has ever been a part of the UK. Seems strange. They don't seem to quite understand the constitutional position of the Isle of Man. They kind of lump it in with the Isle of Wight or the Isle of Dogs or the Isle of Ely. They genuinely don't seem to understand the coverage that happens with Jet Ski Man and people like that, and the Doncaster 6 and the Swansea 3. They never quite seem to understand. Do you think sometimes the people who represent the Isle of Man don't quite get that message across to people in the UK? There is a constitutional difference between the UK and the Isle of Man, and always has been. Let me see. Everybody's asking. Three or four people asking who was talking. It was Roy Moore, the iconic Roy Moore. I'm sure Ireland Drainage and Groundwork will see fit to give their lads a nice Christmas bonus for their work they've done on the scoreboards, says Paul as well. Maintenance is missing from the government's vocabulary, the scoreboard, the Cozy Nook, the Ramsey Pier, the promenade. Well, I was thinking when Roy Moore was talking about the iconic TT scoreboard, an iconic structure, but of course, very much the worse for wear because of being outdoors 365 days a year and be subject to the Manx weather, of course. And I was thinking about the Cozy Nook and those two well-known buildings that have been saved from demolition for now, the Cozy Nook in Port Erin, Trafalgar House in Douglas. Now, both have been issued with building preservation notices. The Cozy Nook in particular has received a lot of attention of late after the commissioners voted to demolish the site. News ill-received by many in the community and around the Isle of Man, who said it has historic significance. The DEFA Minister, the Environment, Food and Agriculture Minister, Geoffrey Boot, who was on The Man in Line last week, was asked about the decision regarding the Cozy Nook and Trafalgar House.
The notices set the process in motion to look at them in more detail. It would be illegal to demolish them or do anything damage the buildings whilst the notices are current. We will look at them as quickly as we can to determine whether there are features that are worthy of registration. Both buildings have history and they go back a long way, and it may well be that there are they are worthy of registration, but we need to do a detailed process, and if that determine that they are worthy of registration, then we will go down that process and go out to consultation with the owners.
Does this put paid to the commissioners' plans? They had some fairly ambitious and quite modern plans for that site, didn't they?
It hasn't put paid to them at all at the moment. We're simply going to review the situation, and then if the building is deemed worthy of further investigation and a formal process, then we'll go through that. And if it goes through that process, then I suspect that the mass of the existing building will remain and there will be no demolishing it. But we're jumping the gun a bit there. Let's go through the process.
If not, it could be demolished still, I suppose.
If it was not worthy of registration for one reason or another, then of course it could be demolished.
Geoffrey Boot talking about the Cozy Nook, talking about Trafalgar House in Douglas as well. And, building preservation notices isn't the same as registration, of course, and may not prevent it from happening. So I just wonder if, bearing in mind that what's happened to the TT scoreboard as well. And the Cozy Nook, of course, is a conundrum, really. It is tiny in terms and does have real problems of access and car parking. So quite what you would do about it, whether you, and this phrase has been used, you know, preserved in aspic, is do you keep it as it is or do you do something about it? Do you keep the basis of what the Cozy Nook will be and do something to update it, or do you keep it as it is, or do you just flatten it and make something that is, you know, you could take it up two or three stories and take access from the upper promenade. It may be a sacrilege to some people, but at the moment it's very difficult to get to. And certainly, of course, when it was popular, well, it's not been open for a while yet, but when it was open, it was difficult to get to when it was very good weather and parking was very difficult. Juan's with us now. Good afternoon, Juan.
Hi, Andy, all right?
Good, thanks. What's on your mind?
I'll just ring up to say good to hear Roy Moore on the radio there. And I can't believe people ringing up asking who he is.
Well, there'll be somebody out there somewhere. But, I mean, I can listen to Roy all day long, Duan.
Yeah, me too. Good to hear Manx voice on the radio for a change anyway.
That's good. So what do you think about no TT next year, Duan?
Well, yeah, it's a bit of a shock. Not a shock, but a blow to the Isle of Man. And that's another thing that winds you up too, is people saying that...
Are you a TT fan, Duan?
Oh, yes, always have been, aye. Yeah, we're into bikes, like, we live on the course.
And whereabouts do you live?
Well, I'm just now, but I have a bike shop in Sulby, and we lived on Sulby Street as kids, like.
So tell me, we've not seen the design for this new scoreboard. I mean, what do you think about what they should do?
I don't know. I never get to Douglas much, so I haven't seen it for a while.
Okay. You wouldn't be missing much on Douglas Promenade, anyway. No. All right, June, thanks for calling us today.
They should do. They'll do anything anyway. Yeah. They do what they want anyway.
Thanks for being with us today, June. Good to talk to you. High water, 12:21 today, 5 minutes ago. Low water is at 12 minutes to 7 tonight, and the late high tide, 16 minutes to 1. So we got high water at the moment on Douglas Promenade. I think I got the wrong glasses on earlier on. It is high water, and Douglas Promenade is closed because of coastal overtopping from Marina Road to Port Jack. So from Greensill's Corner to Port Jack is closed because of coastal overtopping. There's going to be a film about that guy that arrived on a jet ski. We reckon Ewan McGregor will play him as well. And Judy said, great to hear Roy Moore. Really missed his voice. And of course, you could almost be, close your eyes, and it could be the end of May, start of June. Tracy said, Andy, I'm emailing about masks on the Isle of Man. We wear masks as we're high risk. This a couple of days ago, do you remember somebody emailed in, said, why are some people wearing masks on the Isle of Man? We don't really know who's come over from across or whether they've self-isolated. Nobody on the Isle of Man seems to wear masks or to maintain social distancing, which Tracy said, we find worrying and slightly complacent. I'm surprised your correspondent, this was a couple of days ago, questioning the use of masks on the Isle of Man. Have they forgotten there is a pandemic still? Interesting, some people, when they see a mask, and that was the point of the email that came in, was when they see a mask, they think it's somebody coming from across who doesn't quite understand where they are. And obviously, six welders from Doncaster turned up in Tesco and had masks and stuck out like a sore thumb and got reported, prosecuted, and went to jail. But some people on the Isle of Man are and do consider themselves at risk and do wear masks. And if you're one of them, it'd be interesting to know what the reaction's been to you. Where did the jet ski man leave the jet ski when he walked all the way to Douglas? And don't you think he'd be tired, wet and cold after 4 hours on the Irish Sea? You wouldn't leave an expensive jet ski lying around. So where is the jet ski? This is a question. We got lots of questions about this yesterday. Where is the jet ski? You can't just hide a jet ski. Maybe it'll pop up in the lost and found. You never know. And also Dave said, your last caller should realise not everybody's into bikes or has any interest in them. So wouldn't know who Roy Moore is. Well, I think it was all very good natured. We all know who Roy Moore is. Brian, good afternoon.
And good afternoon to you, Andy. And what a lovely afternoon it is as well.
Special day today, Brian.
Special day today. I should say from the outset that I have resigned from the Manx Landlords Association. Not for any other reason than that pressure of work and family and illness and all sorts of things creeping in. I just couldn't afford the time. So I'm still supporting them, but I'm speaking now as an individual. Now, this landlord's bill that's going through and all of these scumbag thieving landlords that there are, my mother is one, she's 97, you have to bear in mind that the thieving scumbag landlords are treated as commercial by the bank. So if they go into a buy-to-let scheme, they can't get it on a mortgage. They have to pay a higher rate of interest. Plus the fact you don't get free banking. So you have to pay, and it costs me round about £30 a month for bank charges. If you get an advocate to draw up the lease, they are very kind, nice people, and they'll deal with the scumbag landlords. And the most expensive that I've come across so far is only £450 an hour. They also will charge you a sizable sum for conveying the property when you purchase it. And then the government very kindly take £4.80 per thousand, which is, you know, usually a thousand or two to convey the property into your name, this very nice government. Then you've got 20% tax that's taken away straight off the rent. So anything that's paid in rent goes straight into the government's coffers there. If by chance you do any repairs to the property, the government want to put VAT on top of that. You have to have your boiler serviced, the alarm serviced, and at the end of all this, you as a fat cat landlady, as my mother is, at 97 years of age, now resident in Salisbury Street Nursing Home, is able to reside there for only just short of £1,050 a week, which she pays and probably will have to sell all her property to cover the cost of that. They're very kind at Salisbury Street Nursing Home because she does get gruel. Everything that she has to eat at 97 has to be pureed, so she basically eating a teaspoonful of gruel every day. So it must be very expensive to feed her out of that £1,000+ a week. Oh, and then they wrote to me to say that it's up to me to bring her toiletries and tissues and shampoos in because they don't provide that. So I'm not seeing her so much as a scumbag landlady anymore. I'm just seeing her as somebody who is very, very stupid and bought her own house in order that she could have it stolen from her in later life.
What do you feel about the fact that public sector houses don't come under this? The public sector landlords won't come under the new rules, the new legislation?
Of course they don't. I mean, that's the situation. When the National Health Service killed my wife, I could have taken an action, but you can't have advocates operating here on a no-fall, no-fee basis. They made that illegal. So I put about £10,000 or £12,000 down, and they weren't even replying to the letters. I've got an independent report that said that cock-ups within the system cost my wife at least 18 months useful life. And, you know, bearing in mind that at an early stage I wrote to the Chief Minister and saying she's not receiving any treatment and there are obvious glitches in the system and that needs to be addressed. And I got a very nice email back from his secretary saying that he's very disappointed that I find myself in this situation, but he'll leave it to the hospital to respond. I have to say that I've got this history's repeating itself at the moment, and David Ashford has been more proactive and been very helpful to try and get some of these glitches out of the way. But going back to public sector housing, they can't possibly include public sector housing because they're falling woefully short on all of the requirements. Plus the fact that in 2004, when I was on Onken Commissioners, they published a document which was a public sector housing discussion document, which was produced by the Department of Local Government for all of the authorities to read and discuss at a meeting that was held at Mount Murray. And in that document, it indicated that each new local authority property creates, on average, a £100 per week shortfall that's made up by the deficiency payments. And since that time, rentals have not followed inflation, costs have escalated, the whole of the administration and management department of government that look after local authority properties are quite used to making vast losses, and it is that department that is trying to dictate to the private sector how they should operate. Now, we all need good health and safety. We all want people to be safe in their properties and builders to be safe when they go onto sites. But you have to bear in mind, when you apply minimum rates of pay and the necessity, sometimes over the top necessity, for safety equipment and scaffolding and all the rest of it, that puts a cost somewhere. And somebody has to bear that cost. Now, at the moment, it's all the private sector that's bearing the cost for all the public sector's inefficiencies. Now, whether we like it or not, we're marching rapidly towards a communist society. I can see a time in the future where, as you are dragged into Noble's Hospital, out of the emergency ambulance, they will be asking you what your means are to decide whether you're going to be treated free of charge or whether you're going to have to pay.
Do you consider the government anti-business?
Oh, very much so. And it's natural that they will be, because they've, in the main, never been in business, don't understand business, don't understand business economics, and do stupid things like block up the promenade and isolate businesses from their customers for a protracted period of time. And we've got silly, silly situations whereby there's no comeback on any of the individuals. They want to fine private landlords up to £10,000 and imprison them for not conforming with their recommendations. But the promenade, which is the most over budget and over schedule program that's ever been in the Isle of Man, have we got anybody to hold to account for it? It just goes on and on. People who are in charge of these things, I mean, Mr. Baker and our own MHK, Rob Collister, who both are in charge of that department. Rob Collister has sent me an email saying, oh, it's not my fault. I don't understand these things, and I have to do as I'm told by the experts in our department. Well, first of all, they're not experts. If they were experts, we wouldn't be over time, over budget, and taking all this flack. And the other thing I would say is, if you want to wear the fancy suit like a captain on a ship, and you want to pick up the fancy salary like the captain on a ship, like the captain of any of the vessels that have sank, you are responsible. You take on that responsibility, and you have a duty to the people to look after their interests to the best of your ability. To sit back and try and push the buck onto somebody else is just ridiculous.
Okay. All right, Brian, thanks for being with us today. Appreciate
you. I don't feel very strongly about it, as you probably noticed.
Well, I'm glad you got it off your chest. Would you get off the fence, please, Brian?
That's my backside, fence shape.
Thank you. 19 minutes to one on Manx Radio.
B&B Furniture, the island's largest furniture store.
Cold winter weather means red-hot savings with up to 25% off in B&B Furniture's massive winter sale. Sofas and suites, dining furniture, beds and bedroom furniture, or a new kitchen. Savings of up to 25% store-wide on selected top brands. The massive winter sale is now on at Snugborough Trading Estate.
B&B Furniture.
Premium beers, wines and spirits for less this Christmas. Sainsbury's Taste the Difference always stands for exceptional quality and value. So celebrate extra savings right across the range. Regional brews, 3 for £5. Seriously good wine starting at 3 bottles for £18. Champagne for £19. Excitingly flavoured gins and single malts. Raise a glass and taste the difference with Sainsbury's, only at ShopRite and your new look Winerite. Proudly locally owned.
At Conister Bank, we've been helping local people for over 85 years, and we're here to help your businesses through this global pandemic. As a local bank, we can either stand by or stand up, and we choose to stand fast to our commitment to this island. If your business has been affected, we can help with our new working capital loan. With repayment terms over 1 to 6 years for the first 12 months, you will only repay interest to allow your business time to recover. Apply online today at conisterbank.co.im. Terms and conditions apply.
NFU Mutual Insurance in Douglas would like to thank all of our existing customers for your continued business throughout this year, and we look forward to serving you further into the coming new year. And to prospective customers, remember, NFU Mutual are local to you on South Quay Douglas for all of your personal, commercial and business insurance needs. Call us on 674 191 to see how we can help you. Wishing everyone a wonderful Christmas and a happy new year from all of the staff at NFU Mutual Insurance.
As we make our way through December, we've already had some big winners on the Manx Radio Advent Calendar.
Okay, Rose, are you ready? The Snowman was first screened on Channel 4 in which year?
I'm going to go for 82, but I've got a feeling it's going to be 79, but I'm going to go for 82.
That year on Boxing Day, the Snowman was shown for the very first time.
Manx Radio Advent Calendar, powered by Waltons.
And we've still got lots of big prizes to give away. Just keep listening for a door to open each day for your chance to be a big Christmas winner here on the Nation Station.
The Man in Line, daily interaction, debate and exchange of ideas. Broadcast on Manx Radio from midday till 1, Monday to Friday.
Cracking on at 16 minutes before 1 on Manx Radio. Lots of people telling me about the jet ski, which apparently was left in Ramsey Harbour. Somebody posted it at the weekend asking who abandoned it. So if you have a photo of it, please send it to studio@manxradio.com, or you can send it to newsroom@manxradio.com. Jet ski man was only bringing the island supply of COVID-19. Well, that was one of the other questions we were going to ask Director of Public Health, Mr. Ashford. Sadly, they couldn't make it today. Mr. Ashford lost his voice, and there was a last-minute meeting. We just want to know, the question says, who's bringing in the COVID-19 vaccine, and when is it arriving? Is it coming in an Amazon parcel? I've seen pictures of the abandoned jet ski in Ramsey Harbour. It's got an English registration number. Not sure if it's the one that he used at the moment. When are people going to learn, says Rob, that masks protect the public from the wearer, not the other way around? So not protecting us from people who should be isolating. So masks protect the public from the wearer, not the other way around. I consider myself at risk when I go out on my bike, at risk from people not using their mirrors, but not from COVID. There are many other things out there trying to get you, said Gary in Ramsey. In this weather, Andy says, William, I've just finished 2 weeks isolation from returning from university at Christmas. Under the current rules, you're allowed to go off premises for 1 hour of exercise each day during your isolation, provided you socially distance and wear a face covering, which may be why we're seeing people wearing face coverings. I did feel a bit self-conscious wearing my mask in this virus-free community, but was very glad to be able to get some fresh air and exercise while isolating. Well, thank you for putting that into perspective. Billy, so if someone is self-isolating under the rules of it, you're allowed to socially distance and wear a face covering and go out for an hour to get some exercise. A note in that also said, aren't public sector rents going up? Yes. If you live in public sector housing, your annual rental could be going up about £80 per year. Is that the equivalent of about £1.50 per week? The Department of Infrastructure has announced a 1% rent increase from April next year, which equates to between £78 and £1.52 per week. Some tenants have amassed debts during the evictions freeze. The Infrastructure Minister, Tim Baker, insists the price rise is necessary to cover the cost of maintenance. Brian was bringing up the dilemma. The difference between someone who can amass resources during their life and husband their resources and purchase property, but of course, if they then go into care, that property could be sold. A couple of points about the wearing of masks. We don't have COVID-19 in the community, so there's no chance of getting it. Masks, says Mark, have very little effect on anyway in preventing the spread of the virus, as the cloth material that most of them are made from can't prevent the virus from passing through. Well, I suppose it depends which ones you get. The virus is smaller than the smallest holes between the threads they're made from, so it's a bit futile to wear a mask, says Mark, let alone have a debate about whether you should choose to wear them or not. A note in that just said, just a thought, the photo of the jet skier showed him with a large backpack. If he had anything else in that backpack when he reached our coastline, he's done okay with 4 weeks in jail, says Andy. Well, there are lots of rumours, Manx rumours, about what that jet skier perhaps was concealing under his coat when he wandered from Ramsey into Douglas. We won't know, and we won't know for quite a long time.
Spreading that Christmas feeling across our island. Manx Radio, the nation's station. Everyone knows that at Isle of Man Creamery, our milk is green. Natural and wholesome from grass-fed Manx cows on local family farms. But you might not know that our cartons are now green too. We're introducing the first plant-based packaging in the British Isles, containing no oil-based plastics at all. Fresh Manx milk, now in the most environmentally friendly packaging available. Call 632000 or visit isleofmancreamery.com for doorstep deliveries.
I began to struggle with the stairs, but I didn't want to leave our family home. So my daughter told me about Acorn Stairlifts and their new showroom in Douglas. I was able to try the stairlifts and find the right one for me and the home I love. They were so friendly. The whole process was hassle-free and they offered the whole package from installation to servicing. Choose the island's first choice for stairlifts. Acorn Stairlifts, South Quay, Douglas.
Call Acorn Stairlifts now on 672 414 or call into our Douglas showroom.
Ho, ho, ho! Here at Ramsey Garden Centre, we have Christmas covered. Walk through our magical Christmas wonderland. See Dancing Norbert. Fabulous new decorations. Lights, indoor and outside for all occasions. Baubles and beads, trees, real or artificial, gift ideas and a few surprises at Ramsey Garden Centre. It wouldn't be Christmas without a visit to Ramsey Garden Centre on Albert Road. Visit us on Facebook to see what's in store this festive season.
Nearly ready.
Just got my eyelashes to do.
Hurry up. Can't wait for our Christmas night at Da Vinci's.
Yes, Da Vinci's is the perfect venue.
And the food is fantastic. They've everything from a full festive feast for us to a sharing platter for Nan and Grandad, with generous portions to satisfy everyone.
And don't forget Da Vinci's famous cocktails.
I can't wait. And I'm going again with work next week.
A great Christmas starts at Da Vinci's on North Quay, Douglas. Book now on 613 271.
This is the Isle of Man talking. The man in line.
10 to 1 on Manx Radio. And Dr. Henrietta Hewitt is with us today, Director of Public Health. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good to talk to you today, and thanks for getting back to us today. Sorry we couldn't have you in the studio, but obviously understand you have a meeting. Just tell us, where are we with the vaccine? Is it here yet?
It is on order for this week, but DHSC, rather than public health, is responsible for the actual delivery of the vaccination programme. So I think I will get a full update at the meeting that I have to go to at 1 o'clock.
Okay. Do you know, are all the professionals recruited to be able to administer the vaccine, and where will it be given?
Again, that's really a question for DHSC rather than me. Recruitment, I understand, is underway, and I have not yet had confirmation of where the delivery centres will be.
Okay. Dr. Ewart, could you just tell us, what's the purpose of the vaccine? What will it do? Does it, if people are vaccinated, do they prevent the spread of the virus? Does it prevent symptoms? Does it prevent them from getting it again? How does it work?
Right. It works by introducing into the body and into the cells of the body a small piece of viral messenger RNA. And that messenger RNA then triggers the cells of the body to produce the protein that is on the spikes on the surface of the coronavirus. And then that protein triggers an immune response, which includes both antibodies and a cell response. Now, this is where we have to be a bit careful about what we know and what we don't know about the vaccine. So far, from the trials that we have on the two vaccines, the AstraZeneca and the Pfizer-BioNTech, we understand that the vaccine will protect people against becoming seriously ill or dying from COVID. What we don't know yet is whether it protects you from becoming infected and being able to pass it on to other people.
So realistic,
quite a complicated thing to get to grips with, but that's where we are at the minute.
Realistically, how long is the process going to take?
To deliver the vaccination programme to five risk groups.
Yeah, or indeed for the entire Isle of Man.
Well, so far the planning only goes up to people aged 50 or above, plus people aged 16 or above with pre-existing conditions, okay? And that's the same as the plan for across the UK. And we expect that we should be able to deliver that programme to all those people by September next year. Now, the caveat on that is that we are dependent on the supply chains, which obviously is dependent on the manufacturers. But so long as the supply chain and the manufacturer can keep going through, we hope to get the delivery plan sorted by the end of September next year.
How robust is the supply of the vaccine to the Isle of Man?
That has many component parts, which I cannot give you full details on. Ultimately, most of it is dependent on whether the manufacturers can keep supplying, and that is dependent not only on things like manufacturing the actual vaccines, but some of the limiting factors, like can they actually get sufficient vials to put it in, safe packaging to transport it in, and so on. So there are a number of steps in that, over which we have no control. But so long as those supply chains work, we will keep getting deliveries.
Okay. And when people do get the jab, are they getting inoculated, immunised or vaccinated?
To an extent, those are largely interchangeable terms in common parlance. Basically, what they will be getting is an injection intramuscular into the upper arm.
Okay. I just wonder, because everybody's seen that, I've heard these terms, inoculate, vaccinate and immunise. Are they all the same thing?
In common parlance, they are. If you want to get into deep semantics, you can go back into history and look at the different meanings of some of them, particularly inoculation, which tends to be a term that isn't used anymore. But vaccination and immunisation is really a global term for all the vaccination programmes.
This is an unprecedented public health scare. It's something that's been, we've never had it before. We've never had anything like this before, certainly with a component that is social media, Dr. Ewart. Realistically, as a professional, how long do you see this thing going on?
I think that is an impossible one to call. It will go on so long as there is circulating virus and susceptible people. Now, that comes on to something else we don't fully understand about the virus. For a lot of diseases, if you have the disease once, you then become immune. You do not get infected again. We don't know. In fact, the evidence so far suggests that's not the case with COVID. We already know that there have been reported cases of people who've had second infections. It does look as if those second infections tend to be much milder than the first infection. But the result of that is that we cannot say that herd immunity, the idea that you get a certain proportion of your population either naturally infected and or immunised, and then you can actually stop transmission. We don't know whether that is even a possibility with COVID. So I think we have to accept that it's going to be with us for a long time to come. We don't fully understand what's going to happen with the vaccine, how long that will be effective for. As I say, so far the data that we have suggests that it protects from serious infection, but we don't know whether it's in serious illness, but we don't know whether it protects from infection and the ability to transmit to other people.
Okay.
So I think we have to have contingency plans in place to live around this, really, for the foreseeable future.
Thanks for being with us today. Good to talk to you.
Okay, my pleasure. Thank
you. Dr. Henrietta Ewart. And that's it for The Man in Line today. Just a quick word about that Amazon Prime membership scam email that's around. If you've been had an email regarding the Amazon Prime membership and it says your membership is set to renew on December the 15th, but we notice the card details that we have aren't right, it's a scam, deleted. The Amazon Prime membership email that's going around is a scam. Don't go anywhere near it. Just delete it straight away. Thanks for being with us today. Thanks to producer Barry Redfern today and Dr. Henrietta Ewart. Sadly, Mr. Ashford's voice wasn't up to it today. We're back open line tomorrow on The Man in Line between 12 and 1. And remember, next Monday, Alfred Cannon, MHK, Treasury Minister, will be with us.